Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 110, recorded on November 23rd, 2010. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that discusses all things iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, App Store, iTunes, and everything else in between. I'm Michael Johnston. With me, as always, is Mr. Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. I actually spoke with you a little earlier today.
Yeah, we're back again, actually.
Yeah, we did the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. As some of our listeners may know, I do the enhancement on the AAC feed for them, and Dave invited me as well as Adam and various other people, Ted Landau, and who else? Who else was on
there? I don't know. I'm just wondering now if John tells you he needs no enhancing.
Say what?
No, John needs enhancing.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Jeff Gamet's.
Never mind. I was thinking of the wrong thing.
Yeah, we're thinking about the wrong thing. Jeff Gamet's also here, and that is the person you heard making the inappropriate reference to enhancements.
Welcome to my world.
And actually, Jeff, you were on the show too. You didn't know it, but you you left a message for them, congratulating them on the 300th show.
You know, I feel bad I couldn't be there live, but my schedule just didn't work out. So I left a little message for Dave and John, and I'm still waiting for my cake.
Yeah, that's what you said earlier on that recording. Yeah, there will be cake.
I assume there would be cake.
There will be. It's in the mail. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Okay, great.
Yeah, so we're here talking about the iPhone. Of course, iOS is the backbone for that experience, and iOS 4.2.1, right, was released?
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
It's released yesterday, correct? Monday?
Yeah, and all the goody stuff is poo-poo.
I don't know. Okay, so we're going to get to each thing in turn. We're going to talk about the various poo-poos and not poo-poos.
You said poo. Hey, can you tell I'm feeling better?
Yes, I can.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
good. Yay.
Let's see. iPad is getting the biggest set of feature improvements, obviously, because previously it was on 3.2, and iPad.
Okay, I'm going to take to task the biggest set of improvements. No, it's just catching up.
No, okay, but we're going to go down a list.
But
yeah. I have a list of things. So multitasking is a first thing. Obviously, that was introduced with iOS 4. We also have folders and Game Center, as well as the improved mail. Now, of those, we're going to talk about some other ones, but of those features, which ones? Do you want to talk about multitasking first? And I've been using multitasking. On my iPad. I actually downgraded a couple days before they released 4.2, and I felt like multitasking on the iPad was just not great. Not as good as it is on my iPhone 4.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I'm preferring multitasking on my iPad.
Me too.
It feels like a much better platform for multitasking than my iPhone, which turned out to be a surprise for me.
That is surprising, especially since the iPad has half the amount of memory.
Yeah, but nonetheless, I find that I am using multitasking all the time on my iPad.
Well, okay, and let's define what we're talking about when we're saying using multitasking, though.
Okay, you're right.
Because really fast app switching is the thing. Yes.
Right.
I'm finding fast app switching, which Apple is calling multitasking, to be far more useful on my iPad than it is on my iPhone.
Me too. For some, I don't know exactly. I can't pinpoint why. I think maybe because for whatever reason, the tasks I typically do on my iPad, I'm moving information around via like copy paste kind of stuff more often, yeah. or it's a usage thing, and oh, it's just. Yeah.
I definitely feel like the multitasking helps, or fast app switching. I think we're agreeing on using that term. I think that's definitely very useful on the iPad. And now that I'm back on OS 3.2 on my iPad, I do miss it. The reason I don't like it, though, is because I feel like it, the RAM fills up pretty quickly. You know, it feels like after I open a few applications, it begins to slow down and kind of not go as quickly as it does with, you know, two or three apps open.
Yeah, but that's because you don't have, you know, my anal clutter thing. So maybe that's why I'm finding it more useful, because I have that same problem where I don't like all those background apps sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
So I will, I'm pretty prolific about clearing that out. So, you know, once I get more than how many apps fit down there, 1, 2, 3, 4, like 5 or 6 down there, I'll start closing out the older ones.
Uh-huh.
Like I clean up after myself.
Now, see, that's really nice. Now,
see, Adam's house broken.
yeah, that's my problem.
but I do the same thing on my iPhone too. But it's not because of a memory thing, but I may be reaping the benefits of not seeing what you're seeing, because I don't like 20 things in there.
Right, yeah. Now, I feel like once jailbreak comes to iOS 4.2, and you can jailbreak it right now. I should say that you can with Red Snow, but it's not an untethered version, which means that if you ever have to reboot your iPhone or your iPad, you have to connect it to a computer in order to reboot, because of just the way that it's set up right now. The untethered version is coming. I'm not sure when, but I've decided that I don't really want to mess with it if I can hold out on OS 3 for now. But I will tell you that what I will do when jailbreak is available, there's a tweak that I think it's called Clear Recents or something like that for jailbreak devices, which only shows applications which are actively in, which are, you know, suspended in RAM. Anything else that's not suspended in RAM, it's not in that recents tray. So it becomes a task switcher and not a recent tray. And I love that on my iPhone 4. It's definitely improved my ability to understand what's running in the background and, you know, switch between those things and kill them when I need to and figure out why, you know, something might be a little bit wacky. Now, on the iPad, because it doesn't have as much RAM as my iPhone 4, I allow everything to run in the background that wants to run in the background on my iPhone 4, unless it's something that's really big. I will also be installing that Backgrounder, which allows me to decide what I want to have running in the background by default. So I'll probably just tell maybe Mail and Safari to automatically run in the background by default, and then have everything else be on a kind of a case by case basis. So if I turn on backgrounding, it'll suspend itself. Otherwise, it'll just clear it out, because I feel like there's not enough RAM on the iPad.
You know, it's interesting because I'm just letting everything run.
Yeah.
Because I want to see how long it takes before my iPad starts getting sluggish with that app switching.
And you're not seeing it.
Yeah, I think that right now, I should probably go look, but I bet you there's at least 20 apps running.
Well, keep in mind, you can't really tell what is and what isn't running, because that's a recent.
Oh, okay, good point. So it would be better to say I probably have at least 20 apps in my fast switching tray.
Right. Now, I would, you have that application, what did you call, it's like Control Room, or you picked it a few episodes back.
Yes, yes.
Do you remember, what's
actually,
that called?
That would be a really good thing for me to run. And the great thing is I have a utilities folder, AppSwitch.
Oh, yeah.
Fire it up right now.
Yeah, AppSwitch. Now, that is one thing that I definitely want on my iPad. I immediately started missing folders when I moved back to 3.2. Because I feel like on my home screen, I have a lot more stuff on my home screen, stuff that I use much more frequently So I like to keep stuff on the first homepage that I use frequently and then less frequently on the second page. And then anything that I don't use on a daily or semi-daily basis, I sort of throw off onto subsequent pages. And right now in 3.2, I have many pages that are grouped by category. And once I move back to folders, I'll be grouping everything maybe on one page that I don't use very often, just in their folders. Now, it is great that the iPad allows you to have way more stuff in an individual folder than on the iPod. It seems like it's almost infinite, but there is a limit to it, right?
I haven't hit it yet.
Yeah, you can put quite a few applications in a folder. And again, there are, you know, jailbreaky ways to get around that, but not right now.
Yeah, I'd stay away from jailbreaking iPads right now.
Yeah, I would too. I would stay away from it too right now, again, without the untethered version. I'm also missing the improved mail. I was really getting used to having that improved mail on there. It's wonderful to have the ability to you know, have everything grouped by thread, of course, as you have on the iPhone right now, and the multiple accounts show up as one inbox, which is very nice. So how are you guys getting along without the rotation lock switch?
Is this where I get to get on my soapbox?
Yes. Go for it.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Apple. How could you possibly take that away from us? And then replace it with a switch that's like completely half-assed? Okay, if you could flip the mute switch and it really shut everything off, I would have some level of tolerance for what they have done. But it isn't even a complete mute. So now I have a switch that is completely useless for me, because if I want to mute, I'm still going to do what it was before, which is hold down the volume down rocker until the speaker shuts off.
And that feature is still there too. It's not like they switched the feature.
Right. So the volume rocker works exactly as it did before. And now we have a switch that's a partial mute. Not all sounds get muted. And for someone like me that uses the rotation lock several times throughout the day, having to do I want it in this position, so hold it the way I need it, double tap, do the swipe, hit the button, okay, now I'm good to go, but I have to go back to the application I wanted to be in, and then when I want to undo it, now I have to double tap, swipe, tap the button again, and then go back to an application. That's a total pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's insane. And a lot of times I'll have it locked in landscape mode, and then later on I will put it in the dock, in my iPad dock, and of course it's still in landscape mode. And before I would be able to flip the switch and it would be the correct way, but now of course I have to actually turn it on, unlock it, double click, swipe over, press the button, and then put it to sleep. So it's just, you know, lovely how much of a hassle it is.
Yeah, I think I tweeted yesterday in the afternoon at some point after I got through the headache that was my upgrade to iOS 4.2 that the rotation lock is Apple's new hockey puck mouse.
I never use that feature too much, with the exception of when I was reading a book that I had, but I haven't picked up a new iBook yet. So I haven't really been using that feature, so I haven't missed it yet. But I know come time when I want to start reading some content, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah. Now,
so there's that. So, Jeff, you were saying you had, I heard you, I think, a couple places say that you were having some trouble with the upgrade, and you talked a little bit about it. You know, the only issue I've had with the upgrade now seems to be something, but I don't think it's related to the 4.2 upgrade. I think it's related to some update they did with MobileMe, because my MobileMe got all jacked. All of a sudden, I was sitting here and the sync error came up on my desktop, the MobileMe sync error thing, and said that my password had changed or had been changed, and then warned me, you might have been, you know, if you didn't do this, then you may be hacked or something like that. But it was like it just got reset.
Yeah, what I noticed was, and I think somewhere during the day on Monday, Apple did some back-end stuff to the MobileMe mm-hmm. website. So I noticed that after I got my iPhone updated to iOS 4.2, that I immediately got an error that my password was wrong for my MobileMe account. And it was as it was trying to set up all the mail stuff. And I left it alone because I figured, yeah, whatever. And it came back up and said and told me again because it was still trying to log in. And I just let it continue and I didn't mess with it. And after like the third or fourth time, it just worked.
Yeah, and I've had all kinds of weirdness related to that. Like just today, I went and I normally have MobileMe syncing turned on, and I noticed my syncing was turned off, and I had to turn it back on and remerge and re-say, you know, yes, I want everything synced back up. And something happened on my iPhone too. I picked it up related to the MobileMe login. Might have been, I can't remember now.
You know, I've
That's been my one issue that I've had since doing the upgrade.
I've noticed a MobileMe login issues several times in the past. Again, seeing that same message that you brought up, your password has been changed or, you know, is invalid and has possibly been compromised, etc. When I saw that, I immediately searched Twitter, and a lot of other people were saying the same thing, that they were seeing the same exact issue, and I guess it was just a problem with Apple's authentication service. But so you were able to get that resolved without...
Yeah, and I remember the other thing. It lost my my voicemail login. So I got called and left a voicemail. I went to access my voicemail, and that password was wiped out too.
Oh, strange.
Yeah.
Huh. Now, I've noticed that in Safari on my Mac, I can't use 1Password to log into MobileMe.
Uh-oh.
It comes back and says that my password is wrong. But when if I go and copy the password out of 1Password, or if I just enter it manually, it's fine.
Now, they change? I couldn't remember what it looked like because I don't log into the MobileMe site that often. But on Monday when this all happened, I went to MobileMe to log in, and the front page looked different to me. I don't remember this blue.
Yeah,
I know
it's been like
changed.
That for a little while.
Okay, but it has been this blue, or is it slightly different? Because they did a big change where it was more like this, but I thought it was still like
so
black or a little bit different. It looks like the buttons look bigger. It looks more Web 2.0 ish, Ajax-y.
Yeah, they definitely changed some stuff on that MobileMe page.
But I don't know if it happened yesterday when I or Monday. Yeah, yesterday was Monday when I started having this problem. That was the first thing I noticed when I went to log in there. I'm like, oh, maybe they pushed the updates for the free Find My iPhone junk and plus
so,
some page updates and plus the iCal updates, and that's what caused all of this.
Yeah, we should talk about that. So one of the new features, quote unquote, of iOS 4.2.1 is that current generation device owners, being new, or I guess, would it be iPad, new iPod, and iPhone 4 owners?
Yes, so fourth generation iPod touches.
Correct, yes. So they all get access to the Find My iPhone feature for free.
Except we were talking about this last night, and somebody pointed out that there's a real strange dilemma, though.
What's that?
Well... Okay, so you sign up for Find My iPhone for free, right?
Yeah.
And now that iPhone gets stolen or lost.
Okay.
How do you find it?
On your computer.
Or on your friend's iPhone.
Don't you have to have a MobileMe account to use Find My iPhone on me.com?
Well, here's the thing that leads right into some of those changes on the me.com website. You actually get to sign up with, I believe, any email address. So when you do that free version, you use whatever at Gmail or what have you. And that's right. What happens. So if you start typing, if you go to me.com and you're not logged in, if you want to try it, it's kind of cool because of all the Ajaxiness they have added to it. They actually have like little wisps of the cloud floating around on this page. So if you start typing, you know, adam@me.com, it'll change over it to the six icons, the calendar, mail, and all that stuff. But if you start typing, you know, adam@macast, it switches over. Do you see that? Are you trying it right now?
Oh, no, I didn't see that, but oh, okay, hold on.
It switches over to mobile me.
For me, it comes up with the icons first.
Right, so if you start typing then something besides @me.com, if you type in adam@macast.com, without hitting return, just start typing, it will switch over to, I guess, a find my iPhone-centric sort of logo.
Oh, yeah, so it just shows a mobile me
cloud.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the change that they did there, and it's kind of cool. So
they did change this page.
You're right, and they added the mobile me news button underneath the login.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you want to sign up for a free Find My iPhone account, I highly recommend you do it. Obviously, I mentioned before that I was able to recover my stolen iPhone using Find My iPhone, so I think it's very useful. So you get that sign up, I believe, with just whatever email address. I don't think you sign up with your @me email address. And then you can, when your iPhone is lost or stolen, you can hop on that page on a computer or your friend's iPhone or iPad or whatever, and remotely lock it, remotely track it, remote erase, whatever. Just the same exact features as we've had with our full MobileMe accounts.
So this would be you'd have to sign up on to get this, you have to sign up using the app on an iPhone for a new iPod Touch or an iPad, right? I believe so.
I'm not sure if it's through the application or if...
I don't see a sign up on here.
I think if you do it from your iOS device, like if you go into the MobileMe settings,
right, that's what I think.
And then you turn Find My iPhone on, it brings up a login screen the first time. I think that's what happens.
From the little Find My iPhone app.
Or, well, I think it's you know how settings. You can go into preferences and choose, what is it, mail, calendar, and contacts? And from there, you can turn on different syncing settings.
Yep.
I think if you tap Find My iPhone and you haven't set up an account already, it prompts you to create one.
Gotcha.
And not having one to test right now, because everything I have was already set up with my MobileMe account.
Right. I'm actually doing it. I'm doing it right now. So here's what I did. And see, this is kind of the weird thing is this is very un-Apple-like. The fact that we have to have this conversation about how the heck do you even set this up is wrong. So I launched the Find My iPhone app on my iPad, and it's not logged into my MobileMe account. And then I click Setup Instructions, and it went in Mobile Safari to a How to Set Up Find My iPad site, and then there it says, you can visit the MobileMe site to sign up for an account, not a MobileMe subscriber. And then there's a button there to get Find My iPad free.
Yeah, it says, I'm looking at the Apple's website right now. It says, in order to set it up, you want to just add a new MobileMe account. So as you would through the settings, add account, click on MobileMe, then instead of typing in your MobileMe information, you tap on create free Apple ID, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. So
No, I'm wrong.
Sorry.
Okay. I'm wrong on that one. You, I guess you use your Apple ID. Yeah, you just log in with your Apple ID on an iPhone 4.
If you have one.
Right. So if you don't have one, then you want to create a free Apple ID. And then once you have one, you just sign in with that. And then the only option you have, instead of syncing your mail and contacts, etc., you just have Find My iPhone.
That is really messed up.
Yeah. So if you want to figure out the process for that, apple.com/iPhone/find-my-iPhone-setup. or just, you know, Google or whatever.
So you have to add a new, what looks like a new email contact calendar account.
Correct.
And then click the create free Apple ID button if you don't have an Apple ID.
Or just,
but I would assume your Apple ID it would be your iTunes ID if you have an iTunes account. Right.
So just use that ID.
That doesn't seem exactly straightforward.
Yeah,
not at all. Not in any way, shape, or form. That's messed up.
I'm picturing my mom, since she's my litmus test for a lot of these things, trying to figure out how to use this feature, and I'm going to get a phone call.
Yeah, I think the better way would have been to add some sort of link or description in the Find My iPhone application. So whenever
they have that, that's where I got to it though.
Oh, that is how you found it?
Yeah. So if you download the app and then you launch it, it asks you to log in, and right under the login, it says setup instructions. And when you click that, it goes to that page on Apple's site that you were just talking about that has those instructions.
Okay. That's good. Because
okay,
I feel
so
like
Find My iPhone should install automatically. If
yeah,
you have
exactly.
New enough
it just
device.
Say, don't have an account, sign up. Why can't I sign up for the free account right from the app?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that would make sense, right? So why would they do that?
I don't know. Anyway.
But I think it is...
The cool news is you get Find My iPhone for free.
Yeah. And it's
if
awesome.
If you can figure out how to get to it.
Yes.
Well, and then the other thing, Jeff, did you confirm... So in the mouse type, there was this weird reference, and I don't know... I haven't had a chance to go confirm it, and I don't know if you did, Jeff, but that said you could... It makes it sound like you'd be able to use Find My iPhone on your older devices if you sign up for the account or activate it through one of the newer devices.
Right. I believe that's how it works. I'm going to double check again on Apple's website, even as we're speaking.
Yeah. It's,
because
it's,
they have a whole thing there.
Item about. Number 3 in the mouse type on that Find My iPhone feature page on the iOS 4.2 page.
Right. So I just went to load Apple's website, and for some reason, my computer or Apple has decided my computer's in China.
Oh, that's fun. You might want to go down to the bottom and click on the right. There's a little.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Okay. But what the hell?
So where's that thing? So here's what it says. The exact text says, you can create a free Find My iPhone account on any iPhone 4, iPad, or iPod Touch 4th generation running iOS 4.2. Okay, so that's what we just talked about. Once you create an account on a qualifying device, you can use your Apple ID and password to enable Find My iPhone on other devices running 4.2.
So this is an Apple sanctioned practice.
Right, so that means if you sign up with an iPhone 4... and you have a second generation iPod Touch, which can run iOS 4.2. You could then have Find My iPhone for free on that device.
Cool.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah, I haven't tried it yet.
That actually makes sense, because let's say that you do have two devices. You know, you have your old iPod Touch, and you've decided to get a new iPhone, and you want to be able to track your iPhone should you lose it. Well, you ought to be able to access that information for free from another device. So,
yeah, but why is the sign-up process locked to a newer device? That doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry. That makes no sense whatsoever.
I think they want to keep the number of free accounts to a certain minimum, based on new sales, right? That
yeah,
would
but
be
I'm
the motivation.
Just gonna, going to get my buddy's iPhone 4 and sign up for my free account so then I can put it on my...
Yeah.
Oh, that's clever.
I think you can do that.
I don't see any reason why you couldn't, because it's just the sign-up process, and then he just logs out of that on his, his device and logs back into his regular account.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen at my house tonight. I have a friend with an older iPod Touch, so he's probably going to, as soon as I tell him that, he's going to say, hey, let me see that.
Okay, so I...
So you'll confirm it for the next show.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get it confirmed for the next show, and I'm thinking that... Apple doing this, they're keeping the average user that wouldn't think, hey, I wonder if I can use someone else's device to unlock or to get at Find My iPhone for free on my devices. Most people aren't going to think of that. Now, of course, the people that listen to our show, of course, they'll think of it because they're better than the average user. But the majority of people out there aren't going to think of that. So Apple setting it up this way.
I'm calling poop. This is the poop show.
That's okay.
Poop on Apple. I mean, just either make it free or don't make it free. You know, whatever. It's okay. I'm okay if it's locked to only devices that run 4.2, but just make it for every device that runs 4.2. Why do we have to jump through a million hoops and stand on our head and if the clock is this time, then oh poof, you get it. That's so not Apple. They keep doing these things that are just not the Apple way, and I'm getting a little disenchanted. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I would agree. So
you don't need to apologize, Adam, because your complaint is fully justified.
Yeah. Well, how about we talk about something that does make us happy? And that would be...
cake?
Oh, cake definitely makes us happy.
I like cake.
But I was actually talking about our sponsor, which is Citrix, with GoToAssist Express. And the reason they make us so happy is... because whenever you have to support someone...
Because their product works?
Because their product works! Because it's wonderful and it's very easy.
You don't have to jump through hoops?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big plus.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about GoToAssist Express, and the Express part is totally true, because... So for those who don't know, GoToAssist Express is a service which allows you to remotely access and support someone else's computer. So the way it works is you sign up for the free account, GoToAssist.com/Allie, and that'll give you a free 30-day trial, and you can cancel it anytime you want. So you don't have to worry about them charging you before you get a chance to try it out, etc. But the way it works is, once you have your account, you download the application on your computer, and whenever someone calls you up, and this is, you know, if you're just a guy like us who occasionally gets calls from mom or dad or friends or family who, you know, they need help occasionally with something on their computer, or if you're in a more professional setting where you're supporting people with software, etc., all you do is they call up, you say, hey, it's really easy. Go to this URL. You open up the application. It tells you what the URL is. There's a PIN number right there. It's automatically generated. You don't have to sign in or anything, which is very cool, I think. You tell them what the PIN is, and in 30 seconds to a minute, once they've gone to that website and typed in the PIN, you'll be able to see their screen. You'll be able to control things. You'll be able to get a full system profile, so you can see everything that's running there. You can see everything that's installed, and you can see everything hardware-wise that makes up whichever computer you're looking at. So that way you'll be able to click around, do whatever you need to on the computer. They can see exactly what you're doing. You can chat back and forth. If you're on a Windows computer, you can send files back and forth. You can actually support a Windows computer from your Mac computers to Macs, Windows to Windows, all that stuff. It works great. Like I said, all you have to do is open that URL and type in the PIN number. And the really cool thing is it doesn't even leave anything on the person's computer. Once everything's done, it trashes all the support files that it automatically, you know, I should say automagically installs on their computer for this to happen. Gets rid of all that stuff. You don't have to worry about uninstalling everything or anything, I should say. It also supports up to 8 sessions at once. So it's great for people supporting other folks in a more professional setting, whether it be, someone supporting computers, or, you know, supporting software, or just enterprise support, anything like that. So you can hop on one computer, start an update on there, go to another one, help someone else, go back, finish the update, etc. It's really great. It's really easy, like we said. And you can get it free for 30 days by using the GoToAssist.com/Allie special address. So GoToAssist.com/Allie gets you free 30 days of GoToAssist Express. It's really great. It's really easy. Like I said, 128-bit SSL encrypted, so it's very secure. You don't have to worry about it. Very easy and fast. Did I mention easy and fast? Unlike the stuff that we're talking about right now. So GoToAssist.com/Allie gets you GoToAssist Express. And with that, we move on to the fact that Apple kind of added support for custom SMS tones, right? They sort of added this. So they added, what, 6 or 12 new SMS tones.
Oh, wait. I had something queued up for this.
Oh, you do?
And now it's not. Yeah, hold on.
Okay. Where I'm holding. Okay,
I'm killing the show.
You're killing the show.
So I had this already.
So Jeff, is a Nightshade in there? Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Is that one of the new tones?
It's the fanfare,
which is.
I think we should have that one for whenever Jeff text messages us.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, it's totally an appropriate text tone to play because this is, after all, the poo episode.
Yeah. Both Jeff and I think these new tones suck.
I haven't actually had an opportunity to listen to them yet.
Oh, let's just go through lucky. some of the wonderful new tones. So you heard fanfare. Let's try... Sherwood Forest. Or how about Tiptoes?
So I want to point out that these are real. Adam is not making this up.
Yeah.
These are the kinds of tones you want to hear when someone texts you, right?
No. I mean, they're way too long.
Yeah.
They're far too long. Okay, so in addition to these extra tones, Apple also, I think they added the extra tones because of the feature.
Because they hate us.
Yeah, because they hate us. But no, they're also allowing you to have custom tones for individual people. So when, you know, JRandomDude text messages me, I get the standard tritone. But when Jeff Gamut texts me, I can set it to do the fanfare.
Right, which is really cool, but could they have just let us like pick our own? Like, how about a true custom?
Yeah, that would have been great. Tone? And like, I thought we were going to get
on
that.
The cheapest free feature phone that you can buy on the market today.
Well, I would say that
get for free.
The reason Apple wouldn't allow something like that is because they don't want stupid, way too long SMS
they don't
tones.
Want stupid, way too long. Oh, here's.
Oh, wait a second. Are you serious? Yeah.
Newsflash.
Yeah, see, if they weren't stupid and too long.
These ringtones suck.
If they weren't too long, then I would understand. But they're too long, and we want custom tones now.
Yep, but you get 17 of them, so you have lots of choices of crap.
17 new ones or 17 total?
Yeah, 17 new ones.
Huh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't updated
it's
yet,
really
though.
Cool. Oh, and by the way, Adam, I think that you'll really enjoy the drawing I did for this week's show.
So let's see, what else do we have on deck? Oh, okay. So AirPrint, of course, is one of the new features we were anticipating with iOS 4.2. And of course, as we knew from last week, Apple removed the big portion.
It only works if you buy a new HP printer.
Yeah, you have to get a new HP printer in order to.
And there's only like 10 of them you can buy.
I think there's 8, actually.
Oh.
Like, or 6.
Well,
it might be getting worse by the minute.
So initially, the feature was supposed to allow you to print from your iPad or, you know, iOS device to any printer connected to your Mac or PC that was shared. But so it only works with HP printers right now. However, I believe Mac Rumors forum member emailed Steve Jobs saying, you know, you got me all hyped about AirPrint. Now with iOS 4.2, I find that I can only print on 11 select printers. Seriously? And Steve replied, lots more coming soon. It's what takes it to make a giant leap in driverless printing, which is huge.
And that's BS.
I think it's BS too, because it seems like all they're doing is sending a PDF and then saying, hey, Mac, you know, print this off however way you know how to do.
It's not even that. There's a new standard for doing this. And I don't think it's been made clear if Apple is truly supporting the new standard, but, and I think you have this in the show notes, there's that other company that is making the solution, which is awesome.
Yeah, Ecamm, our friends at Ecamm Network.
Oh my God.
Printopia, someone needs... $10. Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Printopia. It's $10. Sorry. And it allows you to basically take any shared printer, either printer connected to your Mac or printer that's even networked to your local network. All you do is install this pref pane, and it allows you to print to either a printer connected to your computer on the network, or it also allows you to send it to Dropbox or send it to your Mac, which is, you know, those are more features than Apple was allowing even before they decided to remove the ability to print to any printer connected to your computer.
You know, I really hope the Ecamm people, when we get ready to start doing our editor choice awards for Mac Observer at Macworld Expo, I really hope they submit this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's wonderful. And those guys always come out with really useful features like this. So, and I think that there was another company.
There's Fingerprint.
Yeah, Fingerprint from Kolobos.
And it's cool. Fingerprint is really nice. But Ecamm totally got it with Printopia, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. So again, they have the Dropbox and the Send to Mac feature, which I think is killer.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, just buy it. I mean, just if you have a printer. And now, I think there are some reports coming out that there are a few printers that don't seem to be working with it. But I had a listener email me and say he emailed Ecamm support, and they were like, right on it. They were going to go look into it and figure out. So they got like his information about what printer. But I have an older Canon that I got for free that's shared on a Mac on my network, and that came up right away with the Printopia. And I have a HP printer that's connected to an Airport Express base station, and that came right up.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
and
so the
it's kind of magical when you can actually print from your iPad. It's funny. It's like I told my wife, I'm like running around, I can't believe I'm excited about like being able to print.
Yeah.
Like the most basic like thing with a computer we've been doing like forever. I'm like, oh my God, an email printed. It's like amazing.
Well, Adam, do you remember when we were all first playing around with Mac OS X, like when it first came out? And we could finally print from it because early on we couldn't. I was doing the same thing. I was just printing crap. Look, I can print from my computer. And people were looking at me like, dude, we've been printing from our computers for like 20 years. What's the big deal? No, but yeah. I can print from Mac OS X. Really? They shipped a product you couldn't print from? What the hell?
And you can print from you can print from the photo app too. You don't have any options though, really, for controlling size or
that's,
you know,
what
like
she
paper
said.
Tray and stuff like that. Yeah. So I did print a photo out on my Canon. It looked like it came out just slightly larger than 4x6, like 4 1/8 by 6 1/8. I'm assuming so that you could have some room to kind of trim down a 4x6.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll add at some point, you know, some ways for developers to give advanced printing controls. But right now it's pretty basic.
Yeah. So before we move along, I also want to mention that there is the ability to add AirPrint. The AirPrint functionality that was promised initially by Apple, you can still add that. If you go back to the previous episode, which was episode 109 on wehavecommunicators.com, in the show notes, you will find a link to a 9to5 Mac article, mm-hmm. which gives you the required files to do that. We talked about it last week. And I was able to try it out before I moved back down to 3.2, and it works pretty well.
Yep. And it does work really well. The one thing there's two things I would say about that. I would still maybe make the case for going the Printopia route because
right.
you get those extra features of being able to go to Dropbox or write to your Mac. But then also, you're kind of guaranteed that it's not going to break, or you're not going to reapply a hack. You know, they're going to continue to support it. It's going to continue to work.
Good point.
No matter what Apple does.
Well, assuming that Apple doesn't break it for Ecamm, right?
I don't know that they can, because I'm not sure. I think ECAM is using that. Like I said, there's a standard, and I think ECAM is just using the standard printing over IP
Bonjour stuff,
technology.
Yeah.
Right, and then they're bridging over to the printer sharing. So I think Apple would have to work pretty hard and pretty intentionally to break what ECAM is doing. And what's the other company, the one that does fingerprint?
Kolobos or something like
Kolobos, that. Kolobos, yeah. So they'd have to work really hard to break what ECAM and Kolobos are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and see, the whole pulling at the last minute reeks to me of some deal, some backroom, late backroom deal, and I have no proof of this. This is totally
speculation on my part,
but with you know, HP going, oh, don't we want to sell a bunch of more printers this holiday season, so Apple, don't do that.
Don't put it out
or hold it off. I mean, it just the timing of it seems too weird. The fact that it was in there right until the last minute and it was sort of like gone.
Yeah, see, I think there was some deal thing, like you're saying, that fell through at the last minute. And it might be something to do with patent licensing, or I don't know. But I think that it was pulled not because of a technical reason, but because of an administrative reason.
Well, Steve Jobs does say it's coming soon. So, do you believe him or do you not believe him?
Well, I sure. First quarter after the holiday, after you know, all the people update and go, I can't print, and then Apple goes, well, here's this $99 HP printer.
Well, yeah. So our listeners now know how to get around whatever craziness is going on. So just go grab Printopia.
Our listeners are all above average.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So AirPlay has also been added to iOS 4.2, as we were promised, and the update for the Apple TV has also come in, which enables the video AirPlay to the Apple TV. And
you know,
I'm very happy.
In two apps, just for the record.
What do you mean?
Yeah, but the other app, well, other apps will get updated to add in AirPlay support.
Yes. Michael, it only works in the video app on the iPad.
Okay.
And in the YouTube app on the iPhone and the iPad. And I would assume in iTunes or the iPod app, excuse me, on the iPhone. I haven't tested that yet.
I believe it also works in Safari, right?
No. Or I couldn't get it to work in Safari.
That's surprising. Jeff, have you tried it?
I don't have anything I can pump AirPlay out to right now, so no.
Okay, yeah.
The one thing I'll say about Safari is my assumption is if I could find a video, and this was my problem, is I could not find a video that would normally play. I didn't have a lot of time to do it,
sure,
by the way, just for the record. But I was poking around to try and find a video that wasn't embedded with HTML5 that was actually like a QuickTime download that would launch the built-in like player app and then play, you know, so rather than playing right inside of mobile Safari, but like every video on Apple's website, all their ads and stuff like that play in the, you know, sort of inline, and none of those went from Safari to the AirPlay stuff, even though the button was there and you could press the button, but it only sent the audio.
That's interesting. I'm going to try it more. I'm guessing that we just haven't come across the right situation. I feel like it would be insane if you couldn't AirPlay video from Safari.
Yeah. I think that would be crazy.
Yeah.
And I did try an HTML5 video on YouTube's website. So the YouTube mobile site, that did not work.
Oh.
But if you launch the YouTube app, you can send stuff from the YouTube app on the device.
That's interesting. Well, you can get more stuff through the YouTube site, right? Then you can actually get on the
Yeah, you can
YouTube
get more videos,
app.
But you're only right. going to be able to send the audio to the AirPlay right
that's
now.
That's strange.
That's one, but that doesn't irritate me as much as what happened to me today.
Okay.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to bring this up.
Oh, I am so livid about this. So I normally have my Apple TV 2 hooked up to a newer HD TV set in my bedroom through a standard HDMI cable. Today, in prepping for the show, I wanted to play around with Air Video or AirPlay a little bit more, and so I happen to have this older LCD monitor in my office And I'm like, oh, that has, it doesn't have HDMI, but it has DVI on it. And I have an HDMI to DVI cable. And I'm like, oh, I'll just hook up to that and plug the Apple TV into that and mess around with it. So I did that, and that worked fine. The Apple TV came up fine. It was stretched because it's a weird resolution, but it was doing everything just fine. And I pulled up a video. I played it through the video player app to AirPlay, and this was just an iMovie video that I had. It started playing. The image came up on the screen. It played, you know, maybe a second of video, and then stopped. It like froze, and I'm like, oh, that's weird. And so then I pressed pause on the iPad and then play again, and when I hit play again, up popped the and I'm gonna get this wrong, HDCP. I always say DHCP, but the HDCP copy protection error message,
right?
So the little yellow icon, and said, this HDMI device or cable or whatever doesn't support HDCP.
So basically, your own personal homemade video,
right,
was being blocked for copy protection.
For copy protection. And I know it's because I'm using an HDMI to DVI cable, and I'm using an LCD monitor that probably doesn't have, you know,
HDCP
support for HDCP. But the point is there's no HDCP, there's no copy protected content trying to pipe through that connection. It
right.
gets even weirder though. So I will throw an ad in for Apple's Express Lane service. So I went on Apple's site because I just registered my Apple TV, and you get support for 90 days. And I filed a support ticket with Express Lane, and the guy called me back, and he was extremely helpful. And went through a bunch of things, and he said, well, that's kind of weird. And I explained, you know, that it was an odd setup, and you know, he agreed that that's probably why, because it's an older thing, and it's not, you know, not HDMI to HDMI. But he ran me through a couple things to test. And so we tried the video from the iPad over AirPlay. That didn't work. We tried resetting the Apple TV, so unplugging the Apple TV, plugging that back in, and then I got the same behavior, where the video played the first second and then froze. So you can kind of get it to work, because there was some support stuff online about a handshake issue. I guess some devices have a handshake issue, and you actually have to power them down and power them back on. But this just gets to the root of the problem for me, because then he's like, well, why don't you see if you can play that same video from iTunes to the same setup? So same monitor, same Apple TV. The only difference is we were not going over AirPlay. So I pulled up, you know, from the computer section on the Apple TV, a shared iTunes library, that same video that I had synced to the iPad, played it, and it played fine. So
it's an AirPlay thing.
So it's an AirPlay thing. So then the last test, of course, was we took the iTunes, and you can do iTunes AirPlay to Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
We tried the same video over AirPlay to the same setup, and immediately we got the DHCP error, not only on the Apple TV, but it also pops up in iTunes.
Oh, man. So there's AirPlay just by default
has like
adds
a heavier DHCP requirement.
Yeah.
It seems like, or HDCP, I just did it. HDCP requirement than, you know, the wireless or connection,
the standard
whatever
connection.
Other connection has.
The standard
and
player,
I have to wonder if it isn't because they're more concerned, like someone's going to pluck the bits through an analog hole out of the air. Is that even possible, or is it?
I don't think so. I think that they may try to do something that is HDCP encoded and then use AirPlay as a way to circumvent that. But it seems like it's a little heavier handed than it should be.
We very heavy-handed, and my point is this is another case of where copy protection is getting in the way of a consumer's right to do something perfectly normal. So the assumption on Apple's part, and by implementing this technology, not Apple's part, but just the fact that the studios or whoever is responsible for implementing this type of technology, they make me a pirate, right? They just say, you're a pirate. We know you're a pirate, so we're not going to let you do this, you know. And then they take my content and say, yup, you can't play that content because you may be a pirate, but we're just going to assume you're a pirate. so that we can make sure that you're not going to be a pirate. Right?
Yeah.
This is just backwards thinking. Completely. So now I can't play this video because, you know, they think at some point maybe I might possibly try and rip off a movie.
That sounds so RIAA.
Yeah.
And those guys suck ass.
So I'm really irritated. And it works fine if I go through a standard TV that probably supports all the technologies and use a standard HDMI cable. So I recognize it was a little bit of an unusual setup. But at the same time, I should be able to play my non-copy protected content through that connection. And I shouldn't have to be inconvenienced by the garbage that they throw on there to try and stop, you know, me from being a pirate that I'm not trying to be.
I think that this also gets into one of my favorite topics, which is that it seems like Apple is becoming less and less discerning with regard to how they're implementing various features in their software. You know, we're getting more and more bugs. At least I feel we're getting more bugs with various things and less attention to detail and whatnot. So, you know, it sounds like what they did is they just said, okay, we need HTTP on AirPlay. Cool. And they just didn't test in a situation where it's not protected video. So
I'm hoping. Yeah, and I'm hoping you're right because the guy, you know, did say we'll send this back to the engineers.
Okay,
so
good.
At this point, you know, I'm angry because it's a fresh wound, but I am willing to accept the fact that maybe this is a bug. It is a brand new feature. Maybe they weren't aware of it, and maybe it'll be patched. And I hope, you know, in the 4.2.2 update, yep, it's fixed. And then, you know, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
So, but you know, now it's just irksome, you know, when you see that, knowing that that technology is only there because of why we all know it's there, you know.
Right, because they work with the studios.
Yeah.
So now that brings me to something that I want to mention every once in a while, which is, you know, let Apple know when you come across a problem. Apple's fairly good, at least in my experience, with fixing things that you bring to their attention. It may take a while. Sometimes it does take a while. Sometimes it's very quick. I've had them fix some features in various applications as soon as you report them. And I think it's bugs.apple.com, right?
Oh, I don't. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, bugs.
I always use the feedback. I use apple.com/feedback, but.
Bugs.apple.com. Maybe I'm crazy.
Very possible.
Yeah, that doesn't go anywhere.
So we love you.
Okay, good. Bugreport.apple.com. That's the one you want. But you have to have an Apple ID. But yeah, if you're interested in reporting bugs, I definitely suggest writing stuff down and occasionally going through and reporting a few bugs. And I do that, and I think that will hopefully help our experience with software.
And just on this HDCP thing, it has been around since before AirPlay. There's been some reports of it on other Apple TVs and with other devices and things like that. Yeah. So it's not necessarily new and might not just be restricted to AirPlay. That's just where I happen to encounter it for the first time. So there's probably people out there going, oh, I've been having that issue with my Apple TV for a long time. And it is out there, but hopefully they can get it fixed up across the board.
Yep. So coming back to my obsession with the white iPhone.
An interesting
story popped up the other day regarding, I believe it's whiteiphone4now.com, which is one of the websites I believe I mentioned that sells the conversion kits. So they sell the front glass, the back glass, and the home button to turn your iPhone 4, your black iPhone 4, into a white iPhone 4. According to the New York Observer, the guy who started that, he's a 17-year-old student from Queens in New York. He has actually, I believe, grossed $130,000 worth of white iPhone 4 conversion kits. So at either $280 for the full conversion or $135 for the back or $170 for the front and home button, he's been making a lot of sales. So it seems like there are a lot of people who want the white iPhone 4. Obviously, this guy doesn't do the conversion for you, so it you know, you have to do it yourself, and you have to have some knowledge and ability and a steady hand to do this. And this is something, you know, I keep thinking about, but I just, you know, it seems like it's too hard to do
for the average user.
Absolutely,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But it is
definitely
it is good to see that this is one of the credible websites. It's not hopefully going to, you know, just steal your credit card number. And I think it goes through PayPal, right? They say 470 plus kits have been shipped so far.
Yeah, it's interesting because the front piece has all the stuff that has to be laminated together.
Right.
So when you buy it, it has the Retina display and everything.
Yeah, which is really interesting. You know, they, in the piece, in the New York Observer's piece, they actually spoke to the kid, and he says that he knew a guy from a few years back that had a relationship with folks in Foxconn, and that's how he was able to make the connection that enables him to get these parts. Now, he says that a private investigator will be has said that they're going to let's see here. Lamb's success has not gone unnoticed, however, as he now received a letter from a purported private investigator claiming that Lamb is trafficking in stolen goods, and he intends to secure services of a lawyer to defend himself, which is very interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, the kid claims to be buying the stuff legitimately.
Right.
And Foxconn is saying, we're not selling any white iPhone 4 parts. And these are both things that I would expect to be said.
Sure.
Regardless of whether or not they're true. That would be the appropriate thing to say.
Right, yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, this kid's getting, excuse me, getting parts that on the surface would appear to be legit, you know, especially when you look at the front piece with the Retina display laminated in and everything. I'm curious to see how this one turns out.
Yeah, and it's also very interesting that he's also getting the back pieces, the back glass with the flash diffuser as well now. And that was one of the things that you could always tell that it was not a an OEM white iPhone, because it wouldn't include that little ring around the flash which diffused it. And I'm not sure if it's getting any of the problems that the white iPhone 4 supposedly has with bleeding flash, but, you know, it seems like, you know, what, I mean, how could you get a Retina display laminated onto this front glass? It's very interesting.
And, of course, we are assuming it really is a Retina display.
Well, I haven't heard any reports of people saying that, you know, this is a significantly different display than what I had before I did the conversion, right? It seems like most
right.
people are very happy with it.
Right. And just to be clear, I'm not saying that it's not really a Retina display, but I'm just tossing that out there. You know, he says it's a Retina display, and so we have to take his word for it. And no one is complaining saying, hey, my screen looks like crap now.
Right. And I'm looking at some of the screenshots from various white iPhone 4 Now photos, and they look pretty Retina-like, you know. You can tell with the photographs of the Retina display whether it's a Retina display or if it's a previous generation display, and they look pretty crisp. And again, no complaints. So I'm guessing it's legit. So it's white iPhone, the number 4now.com, if you want to check that out. And again, I don't have any firsthand experience with these guys. I have an email in with the guy who runs the site, but I haven't heard anything back from them. So I can't officially recommend them. But according to a lot of other news outlets, they're legit. So do we want to talk about this, the Daily news service that we're hearing about? There have been a lot of rumors about a new service from Apple and News Corp, which will, I believe it's called The Daily, and it will be a daily source of subscription-based news for not only the iPad, but also for tablet computers.
You know, print news publications, if this is legit, they need to start crapping right now.
Yeah, so do you want to give a little overview of that, Jeff, or...
All right, so I haven't done a lot of research into this, but the gist of it is the deal is supposed to be for a lot of different types of news. So it'd be like you can subscribe to the type of content that it interests you. So it would be like getting an electronic version of a magazine in that respect. And yeah, so you'll be able to subscribe to content in app. And you don't have to wait for a printed publication to be mailed to you. Everything's updated daily, and wow, that's going to be a big blow to print magazines and print newspapers.
Yeah, but one of the interesting parts of this, it's very interesting altogether, but one of the interesting parts is that it seems that Apple is helping them out, especially on the technical end, I'm guessing with user interface stuff as well, I'm sure. But it seems like they're going to have a subscription API included, right, in iOS 4.3, which has been rumored to be out next month to support this feature.
Sorry, I'm laughing right at how quick that is from 2 to 3, and it took us so long to get 2. Sorry.
Well, if it's going to be, I think, just like one edition.
Right, no, that's fine. It's
yeah.
Funny.
So the subscription is supposed, or the subscription API is going to allow you to subscribe to something using your Apple ID, and it will, act as a subscribed service would, pulling out money, every month or so. And again, the service, which is supposed to be called The Daily, will supposedly be 99 cents per week, which is very, very reasonable.
Well, yeah.
So, do we think this is crap? Do we think this is going to happen?
You know, even if it doesn't happen the way it's being described right now, it has to happen.
I think so. I think it will add a lot of value to the tablets, right? I think we're going to, it'll really open up how people are using them with regard to gathering news and getting various things. And I think that it will also help current publications with what they're doing on the iPad.
Potentially.
I'm indifferent about it. I'm doing my best impression of Ken Ray, I think. I don't know. I'm not necessarily buying it, because I don't know that I lack news on my daily news or information on my iPad now with the apps that I have, either paid for or free. And I don't know that what I'd really like to see is the model of I get a physical thing and then have access to a digital thing. And I'm just thinking of, I'm a Wired magazine subscriber, and I still like the physical thing. You know, there's certain instances and times where I just want to sit down with the magazine, and I don't want to have the iPad in my lap.
Sure. But I think they do that right now, right?
But I also like if you've ever used the Wired app, they have some great extra content and stuff like that. So I think I was saying this on a recent episode of my show. I pay like $12 a year for the physical print magazine. And if they would just give me an option to say, hey, would you pay $24 a year to get the physical and the digital? I'd be like, yeah, or maybe even $36 or $40 a year. I'd probably pay more to get the digital one, but I don't know if I'd want to forego one for the other. Just me personally.
For me, it depends on the content.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it, number one, depends on the content, but also number two, and maybe even more importantly than the content, I think right now, is the user interface and how this experience works, right? Because we've seen a lot of these applications from Wall Street Journal, from Wired, from Sports Illustrated, et cetera, all these different applications which use different code bases and ways of displaying the content in different models of subscription and I should say non-subscription. If we have something that is pushed by Apple and partly produced by them, I feel like we're going to have a much better experience. It's going to be, it'll make more sense, right, from a user interface standpoint, and we'll also have the subscription part. And so I think it'll be a much better experience than the fragmented way that we are doing it right now. I think we'll still stick to, you know, our RSS readers, whichever we use for those various online outlets. But I think down the line, I think Apple feels that there's too much fragmentation in the way this sort of, you know, more professional, quote unquote, news is being distributed on the iPad.
Okay, let me ask you this: Do you either of you read a newspaper daily?
What's that?
Okay. Do you read physical magazines or subscribe to magazines?
Occasionally.
Yes.
Okay. So would you, I mean, do you see yourself moving away from those physical things and just going to a digital thing if it was available in this model, regardless of how it's presented?
I think with magazines, I would definitely do it on my iPad. In fact, I think with all these models, unless it was something very different from a standard presentation, I think I would very much prefer it.
Okay, would you pay more? Because this has been my problem with Wired so far. And even the newspaper you're describing, I think that pricing, even at $1 a week, I don't know what the pricing on my local paper is if I actually become a subscriber, but I don't know that it's that much.
Like $50 a year? Check. Would it be less than $50 a year?
I don't know, but I know my Wired magazine is a dollar an issue a month. $1 for the printed thing.
Oh, wow.
And which is why I haven't gone to the digital thing, because the digital thing is $4.
Yeah.
An issue.
Which
it has
is
the exact same content and the exact same ads. So they're getting ad revenue on top of the app revenue.
Well, I think that we probably have to wait for a little while until we make final judgments on this sort of on pricing
and stuff. I'll have to see it, and I may totally change my opinion when I see it. But you know, at this point, I really, my hope, what I would like to see is an ability, Apple opening up an ability, and I think a lot of the content publishers want this, and it just isn't there. The ability for someone like Wired to do an additive thing to their print subscription, so print plus digital.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
That's what I would like as a consumer. So, and I don't know that a ton of consumers only want, you know, would go for the only digital thing. I think there's a percentage that would. I'm just saying I don't think that's a huge number yet.
I would agree with you. Even though I would say I don't care about the print version and I would just be fine with reading it on my iPad, I definitely agree that there are a lot of people, a substantial amount of people who would prefer to have it both ways.
I think for the print publishers, they're not thinking the right way, and they would garner more revenue through that model than saying, oh, it has to be all print, or we got to throw print out completely and go all digital. I think there needs to be a transition thing, and I think a lot of current subscribers would respond to that. And you know, you could purely consume it digital and just have the option to not get the print. But I think the problem on the digital side is they want to make more off the digital, and that just seems so backwards to me. It seems to me like the digital should always be cheaper.
I agree. Yeah.
I agree too.
But
now, I can understand having it the same price. If you're going to substantially change the format to accommodate the extra things you can do on an iPad, because you can add in a lot of multimedia interactive features. So
I can give you that.
So someone has to be paid to do that. But charging substantially more for the electronic version, even with all of the eye candy that you can add in, I'm not getting that.
Now, if we're, you know, we're not even clear on what we're getting for our $1 a week.
Right.
You know, we might be getting an aggregation of many news outlets, which kind of seems like what this might turn out to be.
Now that gets really interesting.
Yeah.
That gets very interesting. And I also liked what you were saying about being able to sort of hone my content and sort of fine tune it for me. So almost build my paper, because I'm not into sports. So sports section is not something that I really care all that much about, but I really would want, you know, current news, local news, probably business, technology, that sort of stuff. Cause that's the stuff I like to follow. Comics. I'm not into the crossword, but somebody else might be into that. So, you know, the customization, I think is key. And I think that's why I like services like Netflix, you know, for video. I like what's going on with TV, where I can pick and choose individual episodes. I'm buying a lot of shows, more shows on iTunes, even though it's a little more expensive. You know, if you look at it as versus just getting the, you know, myriad of shows directly and then TiVoing or something like that. But I like to be able to customize and hand pick. So I think that is a good route to go. So if there's a lot of that in there, that does get kind of interesting.
Yeah. All right. So if we're done with that, if we're done with all of our news stuff, and you guys may have something else, but I think it might be time for our iDevice picks. Is it time for our picks?
Oh, sure.
Okay, let's do picks. Jeff, you want to go first?
Sure. And hold on, I have to find it. I'm actually going to pick something I picked before, but it's changed enough that it really warrants another look or another plug for me. And that's an application called Exoplanet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so when I talked about it before, it had the nice little database of exoplanets that have been documented, which is great. But they've done a lot of interface updates to it, and it's like really – it was cool before. Now it's really fracking cool. It has a whole database. The information for each exoplanet that's in the database is presented in a much more compelling fashion than it was before. And they have this whole news thing, and so you can keep up on articles related to exoplanet research. And they have a new thing in there. It's called the Milky Way. And so it's this three-dimensional representation of our galaxy, showing where our star is, the sun, and then showing where all of these other exoplanets in our galaxy have been located. And you can even do stuff like zoom in and like pick our own solar system and zoom in and see how the planets are orbiting. It gives you this animation that looks kind of to scale. It's in scale enough that you can get a perspective of just how massive these distances are. And so you can sit there and watch as all the planets are spinning around our sun. So it has a lot of really cool information, a lot of really cool interactive visual stuff. And the updates that they've done to this, it's a really, really cool application, and it's still free.
Yeah, I just re-downloaded it.
Yeah, go play with the Milky Way thing.
I will. I definitely will. So it's called Exoplanet, right? One word. And it's free, right? Like you just said. And it's available for the iPhone and the iPad. So you can get it on both. It's universal. So, Adam, what is your iDevice pick?
I couldn't remember. I thought I maybe mentioned it, but I don't know if I've made it a pick. Have I done Textastic?
I don't think so.
Textastic. Well, so I am a web developer. And one day I decided to go out and try and find what tools might be available for the iPad for doing development. And I haven't found sort of that tool that I'm looking for, the one that can kind of do everything. But I did run across Textastic, and I think it has a lot of promise and it has a lot of nice features in it right now. So I'm just pulling it up on iTunes to kind of get some more of the details for you. It's $4.99, so it's $5. And the one thing that I really liked about it right out of the gate is it's a text editor, but it has highlighting and code syntax support for 80 different types of files.
Oh,
so HTML, XML, Objective-C, PHP, Perl, Python, SQL, JavaScript, CSS, shell scripting, all that stuff.
Oh, boy.
It has a really nice keyboard built into it, and depending on the type of file that you're editing, it gives you additional keys that would be relevant to that, at least for PHP that I've been mostly working with. Brings that stuff. It does auto indentation. It has this really killer search feature that I like. So you hit search, and when you're searching for something, it starts to pop down kind of spotlight style, the results, and then it highlights the results, but underneath the search area. And if it finds multiple results, you get the text that appears before and after that item that you're searching for. So that's really helpful when you're searching through code, because you may have referenced the same object or the same thing many times, and maybe you want the third one or the fourth one, and you can pick it up based on the information that's kind of around it. It has web dev support for, you know, moving files on and off of it. You can change the font and the font size, your column wrapping. Oh, really great thing for me is it has text expander support. So if you use text expander touch, that's built in. The one thing that it's really missing that I wish that it had was support for FTP.
Yeah.
A lot of the text editors direct FTP. It does not have that built in. So I use another app, Goodreader or something else, to FTP files, and then you can do the whole open in option to throw it back out to, you know, other apps.
Right, right.
That you might have. So you can kind of get stuff back and forth, but you got to do it kind of that kludgy way.
So do they say that they're going to be adding FTP? Because they have web dev support right now.
Right. I don't know if they've come out and officially said whether or not they're going to be adding that stuff. I'm hopeful that they will. And for HTML files, it has built-in preview. That's the other thing.
Awesome.
Yeah. So if you're working on pure HTML files, you can actually preview them right in the app.
I think I'm going to be getting that. I've been looking for an application that'll let me do that, so...
Yeah, the other one, I'll just give an honorable mention to Gusto, which I think is also $5. That does have the FTP direct editing support, and it's really pretty, but it doesn't have the code highlighting and some of those other features.
Oh, so that's really key.
Yeah, so I've been kind of going back and forth between those two programs. I've been using Gusto a little bit for the FTP stuff and then sending it over to Textastic to play around with editing, and then... getting it back is the problem. You can't really very easily kind of get stuff back. So I kind of wish the two developers would get together and like make the prettiness and the FTP support that's in Gusto combined with the text editing power of Textastic, and you'd have like the killer development app on the iPad. And the only other thing, and I don't even know if this is ever possible, but it'd be really cool if someone could you know, if you could like roll in your own little Apache server so you could actually do, you know, kind of more sophisticated web development testing right on the iPad. But
so you could actually have like
that's a stretch.
Have like PHP running on your iPad?
And MySQL. But I think that'd be too much of a stretch.
Oh, that'd be
but
fun. And I'm sure there's someone working on it.
It seems like it would be possible, but like, I don't know how you do it.
People are running websites off message pads. So,
well, I know the power is there in terms of the computing. I don't know what the rules are. I think because of Apple's rules about not running other languages or code, it's probably prohibited.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't be allowed. But
yeah, I'm going to list this as a double pick. So Textastic is the primary pick. It's $5.
Yeah, I would go with Textastic. I mean, you can get around the FTP stuff. and I don't think there's enough in Gusto yet to make it worthwhile. It's nice. If you're looking for something that's really pretty and has FTP support, it is a nice little client. But my pick is definitely Textastic.
Okay, so should I list Gusto?
Yeah, you can as an honorable mention.
That's the honorable mention. It's not Adam's pick. Textastic is the pick.
Yep.
So my iDevice pick is for my iPhone 4, and it is the case which I've been using for it since the day I got it, and it is the in-case slider for the iPhone 4. And I've actually been a happy in-case slider user since possibly the original iPhone, if not for definitely since the iPhone 3G. So this is the one that they've redesigned for the iPhone 4, and it's quite wonderful. It works the same way, has the same idea as the previous slider cases, and the idea there is that the bottom, there's a small portion that can be removed, so you can plunk your iPhone down into a dock or a, you know, a speaker thing or whatever you need to do. So you can pull that off. You don't have to take the entire case off. It still stays relatively protected. And one of the important things that they made sure to do was to make sure that the glossiness of the case did not interfere with the flash. So there's actually a flash ring that supposedly keeps glare from happening in photos, and I haven't had any issues with glare. So it's a great case. It's solid. The previous version actually saved my iPhone 3GS from sure death on the by being flung from the Superman ride at Six Flags. So this does appear to have the same build quality. It's obviously made for the iPhone 4, but it's wonderful. It has access to all the ports, very solid, and I like it a lot.
And you're not buying Glassgate.
Pardon?
Oh, I didn't want to ruin your pick. I'll tell you later.
Oh, the fact that supposedly the slide-on cases crack the glass?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's bullcrap.
Me too. I think it's laughable.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so the it actually comes in, the white is glossy white, so I actually have the white one because I love the white iPhone. Or the idea of a white iPhone.
Of course you do.
Mm-hmm. And, but there's also the black one is a slightly rubbery matte finish. And I think there are a couple more. There's like a red and a graphite version as well. But you can check all those versions out at goincase.com. And it's $34.95. And that's the one I recommend. I've been using the sliders for years now, and so far I've been using it since for a few weeks, and I very much enjoy it. So check it out, goincase.com. And with that, you can check out all of our iPhone picks as well as the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com, which can also be whcpodcast.com if you so desire to type that instead. And you can send feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. That is the email address. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com, as well as Twitter.com/MacCast. And you can find the wonderful member show, the premium pay-for version, at member.MacCast.com.
Yep. Yep. I a couple things to plug. I just did a show with Scott Johnson, Tom Merritt, and Veronica Belmont. So if you're not listening to the MacCast, you might want to check that out. That was a whole lot of fun. And then on the member show, I just did a bunch of tips on how to better organize your iPhoto photos.
Oh, cool.
So organization tips for iPhoto. A bunch of people had asked me about different ways to keep everything sorted out now that we have, 10,000, 20,000 photo libraries.
Yeah, I have a question about iPhoto. I was playing around with it. And I noticed that you can't zoom photos anymore. Am I just crazy, or is that not there? Can you zoom in on photos?
I assumed you could. I haven't.
That is a great question. I haven't really checked. Does the gesture thing work? The whole pinch?
No. I tried that. We'll mess with it.
Oh yeah, you can. It's right there. It's right there in the toolbar. Zoom.
No, that's for the window. We'll talk about it after the show.
Wait, what are we talking about?
Can you zoom in, like, you know how in preview, if you open up an image that's way larger than what it could display in a window, it shrinks it down, but you can actually zoom in further than just showing the entire photo. We'll talk about it after this because this isn't iPhone stuff. But member.matcast.com.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You have to be in edit mode.
Okay. Michael. All right. I'm crazy. Matcast.com, of course. And Jeff Gamet is the managing editor at the Mac Observer. MacObserver.com. And Twitter.com/JGamet is his Twitter. And if you're looking for some of his wonderful drawings put onto mugs, t-shirts, hats, etc., check out cafepress.com/JGamet or Zazzle.com/JGamet. Is there any difference between the two stores, or is it just a slightly different offering as to what you can put stuff on?
It's a slightly different offering because,
okay.
Excuse me, there are some products that aren't available through Cafe Press and others that aren't available through Zazzle. So I set up stores at both so that there's a wider selection of products for people to check out.
Cool. So check out both, Zazzle.com/JGamet and CafePress.com/JGamet. And, of course, my Twitter, Twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, or my Little Reviews, L-I-L Reviews, so that's Lil Reviews. Twitter.com/LilReviews is where I do 140-character reviews of various wonderful things or terrible things that I find. If something's terrible, I will put it there, or if it's, you know, good. So I review both the good and the bad.
I have a guest Lil Review for you.
Oh, good. I'll have to check that out after the show. And you'll have to check it out on the feed because we're not going to talk about it here. That's how I get you into checking out the feed. So twitter.com/lowreviews is that. And with that, I think we're done. We'll see you next week on We Have Communicators. If this ever happens, if we get internet back ever again, I'm guessing it's going to be next week. Almost definitely next week at the very earliest. And I'm going to send a message to Comcast Cares because this is ridiculous. Because, like, we're all just... last night we were all sitting around in the kitchen or standing around in the kitchen and we were all doing various slightly odd things. Like, I was playing with a wine opener, you know, one of those things with the arms and the twister.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of playing with it, and other people were doing odd things like that. And someone said, you know, I think we need to take a video of what's going on in this kitchen and just send it to Comcast and show them what it's doing to us that we don't have internet. Because we're all just, like, just freaking out a little bit.
No. Yuck, yuck, no. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No. 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 You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Fingers.